We are seeing something extraordinary and very disturbing among conservative and independent media across the Western world. Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, October 19th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. This concerns the Al Ali hospital bombing event that took place, roughly two nights ago by the time you hear this. And we're now seeing most conservative media and many alternative media outlets across the United States and Western countries claiming now that the entire event did not happen. They're claiming that it was faked. They're claiming that no one died, that there are no Palestinian civilian deaths whatsoever, that this entire thing was staged. This is an insane interpretation of events, and I will explain why. And let me explain the very simple answer to this, what people are missing, what everybody's missing. Yes, the missile hit the parking lot, not the actual hospital buildings. And when I first saw that it hit the parking lot, in fact, let me show you the photo of the blast. So you can see there the cars in the parking lot, kind of the blast center, maybe a small crater, but certainly not a large noticeable crater in the parking lot. But people are saying, well, how could anybody have died? The hospitals were not hit. The answer is very simple. People were sleeping in the courtyards right next to the parking lot. And anybody who bothered to research this and look at the videos would have noticed that people were sleeping in the courtyard. And that's how 500 plus people died in this bombing. In fact, let me show you the video from Guardian News that shows the moment of the hospital bombing or blast. Wherever you think the rocket or missile came from, it produced a very large fireball, and that fireball would have engulfed anybody that was sleeping outdoors in the open next to the parking lot. I mean, that's the very simple solution. And yet we have virtually the entire group of conservative and alternative media claiming none of this happened, which is absolutely extraordinary. Take a look at this video. So this is from The Guardian, and here's the strike. Boom. Massive fireball centered in the parking lot. But yes, you can see that it would have engulfed a much larger area and would have burned alive anybody sleeping outside near the parking lot. And as you can see here, there's the fire in the parking lot. Quite extensive, many vehicles on fire. They were burned out. And correct, this did not hit the hospital, but it hit, again, the parking lot. Now, we're being told by many conservative media outlets that all of this is faked. They're saying that the ambulances are faked, the victims are faked, that this was all staged, an elaborate theatrical production, which is actually something that Western countries do, but not something that Gaza is capable of doing, or the people of Gaza. This is not theater. These are real injuries. It's very clear. There are many, many videos of the injuries. They are rather horrific and gruesome. And it is absolutely astonishing to me that in order to excuse every action of Israel, in order to excuse Israel's ongoing war crimes, by definition, war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people, that conservative and independent media publishers would come up with this fictional cover story that this is all theater, that this was all fake, that there wasn't a bombing, that nobody died. And they're demanding, you know, produce the bodies. Where are the bodies? There are plenty of bodies. If you want to see them, which I'm not going to show you here, there are hundreds of videos on Telegram from various channels where you can see the bodies if you want. I mean, one of those channels is Intel Slava Z. Another channel is War Monitor. If you want to go to those channels and see all the dead bodies and all the blood and all the clothing, you can see it right there. Now, as I've said before, we don't know who bombed the hospital parking lot and killed these people who were sleeping outdoors. But most conservative media, they aren't even bothering to investigate. They're just leaping to the defense of Israel to cover up Israel's genocide. And that's what it is. To bomb hospitals, and by the way, that hospital was bombed roughly a week ago by Israel, an IDF strike, which injured, I believe, four doctors in that hospital, and that you can find that out there as well. So the hospital was already hit. numerous clinics and healthcare centers across Gaza have been struck by IDF bombing. Over 65,000 residential living units have been destroyed or damaged by IDF bombing. At least 11 mosques, multiple universities and schools have been bombed by Israel. Are we going to be told next from conservative and some independent media outlets that all of that's fake too? Are we going to be told that Israel isn't bombing Gaza? That they didn't drop 6,000 bombs? That there are no dead bodies whatsoever? Absurd. It's so stunning how quickly conservative media ditched all discernment, all skepticism, the minute the word Israel was mentioned. All of a sudden, everybody leaps to the defense of Israel, like Israel can do no wrong. Israel's always correct. And coming up with these extraordinary explanations to try to cover up for Israel's ongoing war crimes, which even the United Nations says are war crimes against Palestinian civilians. You know, siege warfare to cut off their water, food, electricity, and fuel, to bomb the roads and then demand they evacuate. And in some cases, Israel demanded that hospitals evacuate in 1 hour, which is insane. It's impossible. And Israel has ordered multiple hospitals to evacuate in anticipation of the IDF bombing those hospitals. And then when evidence becomes undeniable, for example, the IDF bombing and killing a Reuters journalist, among other numerous victims, then we hear from a lot of conservative people, well, Israel has the right to defend itself. That's the answer. Which is an excuse for anything that Israel wants to do. If Israel slaughters women and children in a daycare center or a school, then we're told, well, Israel has a right to defend itself. Well, actually, under internationally recognized rules of war, Israel does not have the right to carelessly slaughter civilians in its war efforts. That is a war crime, and it is universally recognized as a war crime, especially when someone else does it. For example, when Russia cut off the electricity to Ukraine or many Ukrainian cities by carrying out targeted drone strikes on Ukraine's electrical infrastructure, we were told by virtually the entire Western media that cutting off electricity to civilians is a war crime and that Russia is engaged in a war crime. But when Israel does it to the Palestinians, we're told, well, Israel has the right to defend itself. Utter hypocrisy. It's truly extraordinary. And what I'm noticing is a kind of zealotry, a kind of fanaticism among conservative media where all the normal rules of skepticism, of not trusting the government, of discernment and being rational and thinking for yourself, all that's thrown out the window when Israel is mentioned. And there's even this kind of fanaticism, like I said, a kind of tribalism, where I see this trend now in conservative and some independent media cheering on Israel's bombings of Gaza, even as those same media outlets are claiming that many of the Palestinian fatalities are fake. It's like, yes, kill them all. But then when they're killed, they say, well, they didn't get killed. It's so bizarre. This cheerleading, this tribal cheerleading, it demonstrates the worst of humankind. To cheer on the deaths of other civilians, it is not just dangerous, it is treacherous to the ability of human beings to live together in peace for the future of our world, if we even have a future. Now, for the record, let me be clear. I am not in any way excusing or sympathizing with the terrorist actions of Hamas. What Hamas did to Israeli civilians was absolutely a war crime. It was inhumane. It was barbaric. It was inexcusable. And every single person involved in that Hamas attack on Israel, in my view, should be arrested, should be prosecuted under the rule of law, and if found guilty, executed. I completely support that, because what they did against women and children is horrific, beyond imagination. But doing the same thing to Palestinian women and children does not make it right. does it? You may not be aware of how many Palestinians have been killed by Israel in the reaction to the Hamas terrorist attacks. So Hamas, its attacks on October 7th are now known to have killed about 1,400 people, mostly, you know, innocent civilians, many women, many children, some Americans, some, you know, Filipino workers who have nothing to do with any of this. But now more than double that number of Palestinians have been killed in Gaza. So far, about 3,500 Palestinians. And that number is going to rise substantially. Before long, it will be three times the number of Israelis who were killed by Hamas. And I've asked publicly, at what point is the number of dead Palestinians high enough to appease those who are operating out of a bloodlust that they just want mass death for all Palestinians, even though Palestinian civilians are not responsible for the actions of Hamas, by the way. No more than, let's say, every Mexican is responsible for the actions of a Mexican narco terror cell. Or no more than every white Christian in America is responsible for the actions of some white terrorist that goes off the rails and commits some heinous crime somewhere. Or, you know, shooting up a black church. There was a white guy, I forgot his name many years ago, who shot up a black church. And a lot of the left-wing media tried to blame all white people for that, remember? And there was a lot of pushback, especially from conservative media, said, no, all white people aren't responsible for that madman, the crazy person who shot up a black church. That's his insanity. That's his violence. That's not representative of all white people. My God. But then we hear now from the same conservative media that all Palestinians are guilty by association for the actions of Hamas, which is a terrorist group that does not represent the whole of the Palestinian people, not by a long shot. Yet we are seeing thousands of Palestinians killed. That number will grow to over 10,000 easily. And the bombing continues. The bombing is cheered on by Western conservative media who, you know, 10 days ago, they were all in favor of those who were being oppressed. They were speaking out against the J6 victims who are being held in jails by the oppressors in Washington, D.C., which is the Biden regime. You know, conservative media has been, up until now, up until Israel got involved, conservative media was speaking out against censorship and the lies and propaganda of the governments. Now, all of a sudden, because Israel is involved, suddenly conservative media is all in with whatever the governments say. The government must be telling the truth because it's Israel's government. Do they not realize that Israel's government is run by the same treacherous globalists and depopulation pushers as the U.S. government? That Netanyahu is highlighted on the WEF website? He's a globalist. And that Israel assaulted its own people with the vaccine bioweapons, which is even far worse than what Hamas did to Israel. And yet, all of a sudden, conservative media has forgotten about vaccine genocide. Now Israel can do no wrong. Now Israel has the right, in their minds, to just carry out mass slaughter, total genocide, the complete wipeout of an ethnic group of Palestinian civilians. Because when Israel gets invoked, most conservative media outlets lose their freaking minds. They just lose their minds. Now, I also want to say for the record, I absolutely understand people having different conclusions on who bombed the hospital. I get that. And in fact, yesterday I said repeatedly that I can't say for sure who bombed the hospital. Don't know if it was Israel. Don't know if it was a jihadi missile gone astray or rocket gone astray. Need to use the correct terms here. I don't know. To this day, I still don't know. But I do know that the hospital parking lot was bombed. And I do know that there were essentially, you know, refugees or displaced Palestinian civilians sleeping in the courtyard right next to the parking lot. That I know for sure. And those who are claiming that that never happened, that it's all fake, that there are no deaths, you're disgusting. And I want to bring your attention to a United Nations statement. This is on the UN.org website. UN chief horrified by strike on Gaza hospital as warring sides blame each other. And what's critical to understand in this is that there's a paragraph, I'll read it for you. It says, there have been over 115 attacks on healthcare across the occupied Palestinian territory since the start of the conflict on October 7. Of this number, 51 occurred in the Gaza Strip, with 15 healthcare workers killed and 27 injured. And this was stated by Hyo Jong Kim, the lead of the WHO's Attacks on Healthcare Initiative. Now, I fully understand that the UN is often completely full of bunk. I get that. The UN and the WHO are often just pushing, you know, pro-death propaganda. But the reason why this statement is so critical is that usually the WHO and the United Nations are covering up the deaths. In this case, they're not. They're actually saying that these bombings have occurred and that these deaths occurred. I would be more suspicious if they said that there were no deaths and no bombings, which is what conservative media is now increasingly saying, which is just bizarre. So this is a case where you would expect the UN to lie in the opposite direction of what they're actually publishing, which actually lends credence to what they're saying. 51 attacks on healthcare facilities by Israel. 15 healthcare workers killed, 27 injured. I think those numbers are probably low. You've had Doctors Without Borders issuing calls for a ceasefire and other medical groups and healthcare groups and so on. And by the way, what's now happening since the bombing of the Al-Ali hospital is that Israel is bombing the streets and buildings around the Al-Quds hospital. And this comes from informationliberation.com. Chris Minahan has been covering this. And it turns out that the bombing of the Al-Quds hospital in Gaza sounds exactly like yesterday's bombing of the Al-Ali Baptist hospital. They both have striking similarities. And there's a Twitter account called Lord Bebo, which is at My Lord Bebo, that's B-E-B-O, who is saying that it appears that it might be a thermobaric missile that's designed to produce a massive fireball, but not to destroy hardened targets, which may be why it did not create a giant crater in the parking lot. And it appears that both of these missiles are airburst explosions, or at least that's what's being considered right now. And I want to play a video for you, or at least part of it, that shows that shows evidence that it looks like an airburst missile, which would be a highly technical missile that only Israel has, not that Hamas has. Hamas just has crude, you know, water pipes turned into just crude rockets that have no guidance systems, nothing fancy. Israel has the technology to do airburst missiles that don't leave a giant crater in the parking lot and that may be designed to look like a Hamas missile gone astray, even though it's not. And also, of course, Israel has the capability to fake the telephone recording that they were playing for everybody of the so-called Hamas people caught in a recording, you know, admitting that it was their missile. It was so laughable. It was like a Saturday Night Live skit. It was like a CNN green screen fakery thing. It really a clown show. But let me play the following video for you that appears to show evidence that what hit the Al-Ali hospital was potentially an airburst weapon, perhaps with an epicenter right over the parking lot, which is why there is so much evidence that the fireball and the pressure came from above downward, not from the ground outward. This is critical to understand. Take a look at this. في نار جوا ها
مكانها يا جماعة الخير، مكان المجزرة الذي ارتكبها احتلال الصهيوني في حق المدنيين الآمنين في مشفى الأهلي.
Ich habe in dieser Nacht... dieser Angriff gestern bedeutet hat.
Pretty fascinating, isn't it, that you look at the deformation of the hoods and the roofs of the vehicles, and you can see that this it was pressure from above. That's consistent with an airburst. So that's why the parking lot doesn't have a giant crater in it. This appears to have been an airburst weapon, which could be, again, a thermobaric weapon, a sophisticated thermobaric weapon. Designed to be blamed on Hamas. Is Israel capable of such subterfuge? are you kidding? That's just about all that they ever do is lie. I mean, they have to cover up all their, you know, decades of genocide and ethnic cleansing and stealing people's land and murdering them and shooting them and torturing them and imprisoning them. And so, of course, they'd lie. Their entire foundation of their nation right now is built on lies and genocide. All right, the next video we're going to play is only 11 seconds. And first, on the right-hand side, you're going to hear the incoming bomb or missile from the Israeli IDF that attacked the area around a hospital today, the Al-Quds Hospital, or just in the last 24 hours. And then you'll see on the left-hand side of this video, the sound of the incoming bombing for the Al-Ali Hospital on the 17th. And you'll notice that these two sound and look almost exactly the same. And we know the one on the right is an Israeli IDF missile. And the one on the left seems identical, at least in this video. So give this a listen and see what you think. So as you can see, those are almost identical. They sound identical, and the effects are almost identical as well. And also then the reason why there's not a crater in the parking lot at the hospital, but there is an epicenter of charring and so on, is because, well, there's so much downward momentum from the missile that even when it carries out an airburst, a thermobaric airburst, there is a concentration of explosive material that does strike one area beneath it where it would have hit. So that explains the charring in the parking lot, but not a deep, deep crater. This was not a 1,000-pound bomb that left a giant crater that exploded on impact with the ground. This was, it looks like, an airburst weapon. And now I want to play a video for you of the bombing, the missile bombing of the area around the Al-Quds Hospital. And notice that in the sky, what you're seeing is you're seeing a fighter jet go on afterburner and launching missiles from altitude. And then those missiles strike right near the hospital. This is the same profile, looks almost identical to what was taking place with the Al-Ali Hospital a day earlier. So check out this video. Now, seeing that video, the bombing of the streets near the Al-Quds Hospital, what, is conservative media now going to tell us that this is all faked? That those are all actors? That no bombs fell, no explosions happened, nobody was killed? I mean, I can't believe we're even having to talk about this. I never thought conservative media would be so delusional as to think that this is all faked, this is all theater somehow. This is not Sandy Hook. I'm telling you. So to summarize, I mean, there are really three critical points here so far. Number one, that there were Palestinian civilians in the courtyard, sleeping next to the parking lot. So that explains how people were killed, even though the hospital buildings were not destroyed. Secondly, we have the bombing of a second hospital, which is confirmed by the IDF, confirmed by Israel, and the Al-Quds Hospital, and the bombing of the Al-Quds Hospital, or I should say the streets around the Al-Quds Hospital. And that bombing almost exactly resembles the events that took place around the Al-Ali Hospital a day earlier. And then thirdly, we have this visual evidence of an airburst weapon that pushed downward, and possibly a thermobaric weapon, which explains why the car's roofs and hoods were crushed downward. And it would also explain why so many civilians sleeping on the ground were killed. They were flattened by the airburst pressure and the fireball. That explains everything. So I don't know why people are in denial about this, blaming Hamas for this, when it is very clearly typical of an Israeli Holocaust type of operation, or an Israeli atrocity is probably a better word, type of operation. And there's a really good article that speaks to this on Al Jazeera. The title is Al-Ali Hospital Bombing, Israel Performing Its Usual Post-Atrocity Routine. This is an article by Mohammed El-Masri. And it says this: Israel's response to the hospital bombing, a war crime under international law, is consistent with its usual post-atrocity routine. The routine goes something like this. Israel commits a human rights atrocity, immediately denies having anything to do with it, says it has solid evidence that Palestinians committed the crime, and then just waits to see if someone manages to prove what really happened. If it eventually becomes clear that Israel did indeed carry out the atrocity, it silently accepts responsibility, but by then, the world's focus has already moved on to other matters. Israel performed this exact routine just last year after it murdered Palestinian-American journalist and Al Jazeera veteran Shireen Abu Akleh. So it goes on to describe what happened there. I mean, of course, Israel is lying. That's what they always do after committing an atrocity. And that article concludes with this. When the dust settles, independent investigations will inevitably show that Israel, which had already been bombing across Gaza's residential buildings, mosques, banks, and universities, and had already killed thousands of Gaza Palestinians, including 750 children, is responsible for bombing the Al-Ali hospital. So, yeah, that's probably exactly where this is going. I mean, the video evidence is already very compelling that this was an airburst weapon, a thermobaric type of weapon that killed hundreds of Palestinian civilians as they slept on the ground in the courtyard. And you know, by the way, if conservative media outlets would spend even half as much time analyzing the bombings of these hospitals as they do analyzing J6 video, then this would all be obvious. I mean, all the video evidence is coming out now. It's pretty easy to see. I mean, I've seen conservative websites spend, you know, now almost 2 years just analyzing J6 video footage all the time. But they just believe Israel hook, line, and sinker without a thought, without any analysis, without any skepticism whatsoever. Very disappointing. Now, if this airburst missile is indeed exactly what has happened, it looks like it was designed by Israel on purpose to blame Hamas. In other words, that Israel, in this case, murdered deliberately hundreds of Palestinian civilians in order to blame Hamas and to accuse Hamas of atrocities carried out by Israel. Now, number one, this is classic behavior by Israel. They do this again and again. In fact, they did this on October 7th, when Hamas was allowed to break through IDF defenses. There was a stand-down order. This has all come out. And by the way, every reasonable person who's informed knows that Israel has, you know, the most elaborate and complex defensive and surveillance and alert systems, you know, border security systems in the world. It is impossible, it is unthinkable that Israel would not have known that so many Hamas terrorists, many hundreds, perhaps 1,000, were approaching the border, flying over it with the paragliders, you know, cutting the fences, rolling through. It's impossible that Israel did not know. And the claims that they were surprised, this was a surprise attack, this was an intelligence failure, those claims don't hold water at all. And I can't believe anybody could even believe that unless they were incredibly stupid or gullible. So we already know that Israel has allowed Hamas to carry out atrocities in order to blame Hamas and in order to be able to condemn Hamas, ultimately to justify the assault on Gaza, which is designed ultimately to displace all Palestinians and steal their land. That's the big picture here in the eyes of Netanyahu and many in Israeli leadership, in the Israeli government, is to just clear out all the Palestinians, bomb them, murder them, displace them, take their land. I mean, they openly talk about this. It's not a secret anymore. They openly talk about this. They want to eliminate everybody out of the Gaza Strip and then take it and resettle it as Israeli land. Netanyahu talks about this. Gallant talks about this. Many high-level people, influencers even, from Israel talk about this. It is their goal. And so the bombing of the Al-Ali hospital is entirely consistent with what Israel has said it wants to achieve, which is the extermination of all Palestinians, to exterminate them and displace them. And what better way to blame Hamas than to use an airburst weapon that doesn't leave a crater in the parking lot, and then to try to tell this fabricated story that apparently has been believed by, you know, a lot of conservative media, a lot of independent media, some mainstream media as well. It's been believed by a lot of people. This is, in essence, this is a classic false flag operation. The second one that we've had in 10 days. False flag operation number one was October 7th, when, again, IDF was ordered to stand down so that Hamas could carry out this terrorist attack. And do not forget that Netanyahu supported funding Hamas, and so did Israel. Israel actually funded Hamas, and Hamas is a creation of Israeli and U.S. intelligence. Do not forget that. So that was false flag number one, the bombing of the Al-Ali hospital on October 17th is false flag number two. Again, Israel bombs them, blames their enemies. And I can't believe, again, I know I've stated this several times, but I can't believe how many people are falling for this. You should know better. You should know better. How can you fall for this? How can you be suckered into official Israeli propaganda lies? It's so obvious. You know, it's crazy. It's like there are people out there who say, well, I don't trust anything the government says about masks and vaccines and lockdowns and COVID. But when it comes to Hamas, I believe everything they say, and 100%, they're always telling the truth. Are you kidding me? What happened to your brain? What happened to your reason? It's like, I don't believe anything the government says about, you know, GMOs and CRISPR technology and, you know, geoengineering and all the horrible things they're doing, chemtrailing and everything. But when it comes to Hamas, they're always telling the truth. Give me a break. And let us not forget the narrative that rolled out about the September 6th missile strike that was that hit a Ukrainian marketplace in a town. Let me see if I can get this right. Kostiantynivka. This was initially blamed on Russia. The entire Western media said this was Russia launching a missile, murdering civilians. And then, by the way, it turns out that that was not the case. That was an errant Ukrainian missile that eventually the New York Times actually admitted to that. So in that case, the Western media was quick to blame Russia because that was the convenient narrative. And then the fact checking came out and ultimately they had to correct all that. Whereas right now, they're quick to blame Hamas. Well, Hamas doesn't have airburst missile systems. Hamas doesn't possess that technology. Only Israel possesses that technology. And as you can see in the videos, wait, did I play the video? Let me play the video for you of the flares and what looks like afterburners and flares. Yeah, I got to play this one for you. That shows that an Israeli fighter jet launched the missile, the airburst missile, that hit the Al-Ali hospital. You can see what's happening in the skies above the hospital. This is exactly what it always looks like at night when the Israeli Air Force launches these missiles. Check this out. And you can also see in this video that the Hamas missiles are being launched away from the hospital. Away. Not in the direction of the hospital, but what's hitting the hospital is an Israeli missile launched from an aircraft, and you can see the signatures in the sky. Check this out. All right, so in this video, you see the Hamas missiles launching to the right, away from the hospital. The hospital is in the center of your screen, and then up in the left-hand side, that's the jet that launched the missile, now with afterburners or flares moving up, and there's the explosion of the hospital. All right, so again, this is zoomed in on the jet going up into the sky after it launched the missile. There's another replay of it, so you can see, yeah, classic. These are like flares to stop ground-to-air missiles. This shows what a jet with afterburner looks like at night as it's, you know, accelerating away. And then and this shows what flares look like from a jet that are used, you know, as countermeasures against surface-to-air missiles. And you see this in the bombing of both hospitals, by the way. And then here's a series of flares, in case you're wondering. This is what you see in the sky as jets are dropping bombs and trying to evade. So watch, the jet flies away from the explosion, and the explosion happens in the center of your screen. There it is. Boom. That's the hospital getting bombed, and then the jets flying away. The Hamas missiles are going to the right. Hamas missiles aren't even going toward the hospital. And there's the flare in the sky visible on the bombing video. So this is from My Lord Bebo on Twitter, or Lord Bebo as he's known. So there you go. So there's a stunning amount of video evidence now to support the idea that Israel launched this missile, that it was an airburst missile, which killed the hundreds of Palestinian civilians that were sleeping in the courtyard near the parking lot. And this explains everything. This explains why the hospital buildings weren't damaged. This explains why there's no crater in the parking lot. And it also shows why Hamas missiles could not have done this. Hamas doesn't have airburst technology, and the Hamas missiles were all firing in the opposite direction, you know, moving to the right side of your screen. Plus, we have the fact that Israel ordered to stand down a false flag operation on October 7th in order to blame Hamas for atrocities. And this Al-Ali hospital bombing is another example of Israel trying to frame Hamas for another atrocity that was actually carried out by Israel itself. And all of this is being used to justify the extermination of all Palestinians so that Israel can destroy Gaza, just bulldoze it to the ground and then seize it, take it over, make it Israeli land, and never allow Palestinians to return to their homes in Gaza ever again. That's the plan. And Netanyahu in particular is doing this because this is his political survival plan. He thinks this is going to make him the hero of Israel. He thinks this is the final solution against Palestinians that will give him invincibility politically and keep him out of jail, because he's about to go to jail for his crimes and corruption, by the way, because he is a highly corrupt individual. And he's also a globalist. You know, he's a depopulation globalist. So this is all very simple. Occam's razor, folks. It's very simple. Israel engineered all of this in order to justify genocide and steal the land of the Palestinians, which is exactly what Israel has been doing for decades. They've been doing this for decades. They're just doing it on the global stage right now, in a bigger scale, because they want to take more land. They want to eliminate Gaza Strip entirely and just steal all that land. That's what you're watching here, folks. And most Americans are not aware of the history of the brutality and the genocide, the ethnic cleansing that's been carried out against Palestinians. And I have to admit, I was not fully aware of it either. I guess I was aware of it on the edges. I had heard of it, but not until these events did I really start digging into it. And the plight of the Palestinian people, it's heartbreaking. And I say this as a humanitarian. I mean, I am a Christian. I'm an American. I'm a Texan. I'm not a Muslim. You know, I don't excuse anything that Hamas did. They are a terrorist organization. They carried out atrocities, and they should be absolutely condemned for their atrocities. But Hamas is not the Palestinian people. And there was a really compelling opinion piece that appeared today in Al Jazeera, which I found Al Jazeera, which is published and funded in part by the government of Qatar. Al Jazeera has had some of the best coverage of this. Regardless of what you think of Al Jazeera on other matters, on this one, they have been very compelling. But there's an opinion piece called A Letter to Europe from a Palestinian. His name is Mahed Abu Salama, I think. I think I'm getting that correct. He's the co-founder of a group in Germany called Palestine Speaks. And I don't know if it's pronounced Mahed or Majed. I don't know. It's M-A-J-E-D. Anyway, I'm not trying to get it wrong. I'm not familiar with all the pronunciations. But I want to read for you a little bit from this person's perspective of what these events are like. And it's critical that we listen to the voices of people who have been subjected to severe oppression and ethnic cleansing, to understand the full context of what Israel is doing and why they're doing it. So I'm going to read for you some of this. And I just want to be clear. I don't endorse everything that this person has ever done or written. I don't know this person, But these words are very compelling. And I think it's important that those of us in the West learn to listen to the words of the oppressed before we run around cheerleading the oppressors, which is, of course, Israel in this case. So here's the letter. Dear Europeans, I, like millions of Palestinians, am living through the worst nightmare of yet another round of mass death and destruction unleashed on our people, something you would often simply call an escalation of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. As I write these lines, Al Ali Hospital was bombed, killing hundreds of children, men and women, who had sought safety on the premises of the hospital. Hours earlier, the news of the death of my friend Mohammed Mokhaimar, his wife Safa, and their three-month-old baby Eliana reached me. They were killed after evacuating with their families to the southern part of Gaza. Following Israeli orders, they and 70 other Palestinians were killed by Israeli airstrikes. The only word I can think of that comes close to what I feel right now is kahr, or kar. I don't know how to pronounce it, I'm sorry, but it's spelled Q-A-H-R. Maybe that's kahr. In Arabic, it's not just pain, it's anguish and anger. It is the feeling passed on through generations, accumulated more than 75 years of ethnic cleansing, mass killings, injustice, oppression, colonization, occupation, and apartheid. It is a feeling ingrained in every Palestinian, something we have to live with all our lives. It is a feeling I was born with to a family of refugees in the Gaza Strip. My grandparents hailed from the village of Isdud, now Ashdod, and the village of Bat Jirja, but were forced to settle in Jabalaya refugee camp, just about 20 kilometers away from their homes. Kahr was probably the first emotion I read on my mother's face as a baby. A young mother worried about her infants surviving the Israeli onslaught on Gaza amid the first intifada. Kahr was what I felt when the Israelis first raided our home, and when they first arrested my father, who was subjected to repeated arbitrary detention without trial or charge. Kahr was what overwhelmed me when I saw Israeli soldiers open fire at peaceful Palestinian demonstrators. Kahr was more powerful than the pain I felt when I, too, was shot. Kahr defined every assault Israel launched on Gaza, killing, maiming, and devastating my family, friends, neighbors, and fellow Palestinians in 2008, 2009, 2012, 2014, 2020, and 2021. Today, as I watch what is unfolding in my homeland, I feel kahr, but also deep indignation and frustration. The reactions of your leaders, dear Europeans, to what is going on have yet again revealed selective solidarity, moral failure, and a dark double standard. And he goes on to talk about how Europe has this incredible double standard. He says, European politicians from across the political spectrum, including many liberals and Greens, have joined the campaign of collective dehumanization of Palestinians. Yet these same individuals have been more than forthcoming in support of Ukraine in its struggle against Russian occupation. According to them, Ukrainians have the right to resist, but Palestinians do not. Ukrainians are freedom fighters, but Palestinians are terrorists. Ukrainian lives lost due to indiscriminate bombardment of civilian homes and infrastructure are worth mourning. But Palestinian lives lost in the same circumstances are better ignored or, worse, justified as Israel exercising its, quote, right to defend itself. This European double standard is truly deadly. That European leaders and politicians are taking the moral high ground right now and labeling us, Palestinians, brutal terrorists is quite rich, especially considering the prehistory of what is going on. And he continues, I'm almost done here, but he writes, in the first 6 days of this war, Israel dropped 6,000 bombs on the densely populated Gaza Strip. That, according to experts, is the equivalent of a quarter of an atomic bomb. Think about that. This is a quarter of Hiroshima that's been dropped on Gaza. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 3,000 people were killed, including more than 1,000 children. But we really do not know the true death, as many people remain under the rubble with no one to pull them out. As I write these lines, he says, I fear at any moment receiving a message about the death of my family. Ismail, my father, Halima, my mother, Mohammed, my brother, Asma'a, my sister-in-law, and my most beautiful nieces, Elia and Naya. I want you to remember their names. I would not let them become mere numbers if they get killed. So this is the point of view of someone who was born in Gaza, who has been subjected to the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, the slaughter, the brutality of the Israeli armed forces and the Israeli government, and even now fears for the lives of his family members, and has already heard of the deaths of people that he knows, his friends. It is astonishing to me that most of the Western media, especially conservative media, they write cover stories for Israel to excuse the entire history of ethnic cleansing. And they do so gleefully, cheering on the genocide. And it has led me to a very disturbing realization in the last 10 days or so, that we live in a world of irrational tribalism. And at one time, I might have thought, well, okay, that's only limited to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now I realize that I am living among people who are also animals to be activated all across America. And they are the ones now calling for the continued escalation and bombing of the Palestinians. They themselves are the barbarians. They are the animals, while they call Palestinians animals. I have witnessed people I know transform almost in a Jekyll and Hyde manner, virtually overnight, from a reasoned, intelligent person into a genocidal maniac animal, excusing every act of genocide carried out by Israel now and in the past. I have witnessed that myself, and I've been threatened by Israelis for daring to record podcasts like this one. Threatened by Israelis who threaten me that if I do not get on their side and join their tribe and join the call for the extermination of Palestinians, then I'm a bad person and I should be targeted. Well, isn't that consistent with what Israel does throughout history? Is whenever they don't like somebody, they threaten to kill them. And in the case of Palestine, they carry out those threats and they commit mass murder. So why am I not surprised, right? And finally, I want to note, again, I could have easily been on Israel's side in all of this if they had taken a more humanitarian point of view. Easily. And one more thing I want to get in here. I was going to read for you some from the book of Jeremiah because Brad Cummings recommended that I do so. I may do that tomorrow. I'm going to read the book of Jeremiah myself privately, but I wanted to read some of it for you because it's so applicable to this situation. But I want to point out that in my view, this is my analysis, some people may disagree, but in my view, there are a lot of people who shield their genocide with the Bible. They claim to be Christians, but they support mass killing. They claim to be Jews, but they support genocide. They support a Holocaust against other people. Yes, I just said that. Yes. You can quote me on that. A lot of people hide behind this false facade of being Christians, of being people of God, when they're actually carrying out the devil's work, which is murder, slaughter of innocents, destruction. They do it in the name of God, and you can bet that God doesn't like that. And the point I'm getting to here is that I don't think that there are really that many people on this planet who are going to be saved by God. I think the vast majority of those who claim to be Christians or Jews are actually not qualified in the eyes of God to be saved. That's my analysis, because I'm witnessing it right now. I'm seeing that the number of people who actually operate based on principle, i.e., you know, principles that God wants us to follow, like thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder. You know, and I cited scripture the other day. There are, you know, important scriptures, even including in Proverbs, that talk about why it's wrong to murder innocents. Now, surely, you know, God kills the guilty himself. And that has happened throughout the Bible. And he doesn't have anything against killing the guilty, but he is strongly opposed to killing the innocent. And that makes me believe that anybody who runs around claiming to be a Christian or a Jew who is advocating killing the innocent, they are not going to be saved. They do not have the favor of God. And I don't think that they're going to heaven. Now, again, I'm not a pastor. I'm not a Bible scholar. I can't see the future. You know, God didn't tell me that or anything. That's just my estimation. That's my conclusion. But I think a lot of people who think they're Christians are actually going to hell. I should call Todd Coconato, Pastor Coconato, and I should ask him that question, see what he thinks. He might disagree with me. I don't know. I mean, some people think that you can carry out all kinds of evils throughout your life, and then at the last minute, you can say, you know, I ask God for forgiveness, and I welcome Jesus into my life. Save me. And as long as you utter that before your last breath, then you are saved. I'm not so sure I believe that. I don't know. What do you think? That doesn't sound legit to me. I know people would say, well, God is merciful, but is he merciful for people who themselves have not been merciful? See, there's the question. If you run around murdering women and children, and then on your deathbed, you ask God for forgiveness, does he forgive you? I doubt it. I doubt it. I think you're locked into hell, actually, at the time you carry out murder. Well, what about the pilot of the Israeli jet that launches the missile that slaughters hundreds of people on the ground? Is that pilot ever going to heaven? I doubt it. I think that pilot goes to hell. Well, what about his commander who ordered the jet into the air to drop the bomb to kill the civilians? Does that commander ever have a chance of going to heaven because the commander didn't himself drop the bomb? I don't know. I mean, these are ethical debates or morality debates. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe God says, everybody in the chain of command, you're all going to hell. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know for sure how that works. And then there's the argument that, well, if you carried out evil in your life, you can counterbalance that by doing good. If you do enough good, you have like a cosmic karma bank account, in essence. And if you do enough good, it outweighs the evil. Well, if you bombed 500 civilians, do you have to save 500 people and then it balances out and then you can go to heaven? How would you save 500 people? I don't know. Maybe you join a relief group and you drive relief trucks and you deliver supplies that save 500 people. In God's eyes, does that mean you're even Steven now? I don't know, but personally, I always stay way ahead on the good karma side of things because I never kill people. I mean, I always help people. I'm always helping people with nutrition. I'm helping people with freedom, trying to help people to think more clearly. I'm trying to empower people every single day. And I know, just me personally, I know I've affected the lives of tens of millions of people all over this planet. So I don't have any question about my own personal scorecard, but I am seriously wondering about a lot of people out there who are the fake Christians or the fake Jews who are hiding behind their so-called faith to justify their genocide and their violence and their hatred against other people. I kind of don't think I'm going to see a lot of those people in heaven whenever that day comes. It's like a lot of y'all are missing. All right, I've made my point there. I'm going to play an interview for you here today. This was filmed last week, and I'm not going to give the name away here just in case my editor needs to choose a different interview, but if he's going to play the interview that I think, it's pretty mind-blowing because it talks about child trafficking in America and some of the evils that are actually taking place that are allowed to happen by the U.S. government in this case, but also there's child trafficking in Israel as well. And that is brought up in all of this, but check out this interview. It's It's pretty dark, but it's true. It needs to be stated. We need to expose these evils so that we can stop them to the best of our ability and call for universal peace and universal dignity. I want every living person to be able to have a life of health and joy, and free from fear of being bombed and from fear of being, you know, kidnapped and trafficked or terrorized. You know, all those forms of violence are wrong. The terrorism, the bombings, the trafficking, the kidnapping, you know, all of it obviously is wrong. But yet so many people in our society today are cheering on one side or the other to continue doing all those things. Shame on you all. Shame on you all. I don't care if I'm the last person saying this. If I'm the last voice of reason on planet Earth, which I'm not. I mean, there's plenty of people who agree with me. But if I were the last voice of reason, I still would stick to it. Nobody can convert me into a genocidal lunatic, even if they themselves have decided to become one. I'm sticking with my principles. I'm sticking with God. End of story. Even if I'm the last person to do so. That's how strongly I believe in my faith. That's how strongly I weigh the principles that guide my decisions in life. I cannot be swayed away from those principles, not even when threatened with death. Understand, that's how strong my principles are. So enjoy this interview. And if you want to support our work, I've got an ad here for you from healthrangerstore.com, giving you a little showcase of some of the more recent products that we've added, things that might interest you. Check out that ad, followed by the interview, and thank you for your support. Thank you for your support here at brighttown.com and also healthrangerstore.com. And I've selected a few solutions for you. Some of them are brand new. You haven't seen this before. I've got some samples here on my desk. So we've got colloidal silver Castile body soap here. I don't think anybody else has put that together, by the way. So if you've ever wanted to wash your skin or wash your hair, and you want a very high quality soap, no artificial fragrance chemicals or any garbage like that, and you want the benefits of colloidal silver, you know, because you really want to be clean and you want all the advantages of colloidal silver in your soap, that's the product to do it. Castile liquid soap with colloidal silver. That's available, of course, at healthrangerstore.com. We also have fermented Super 30 back in stock. That's the orange one there. There, my hand's on top of that. Now, fermented Super 30, which combines 30 different superfoods and fruits and vegetables and roots that are fermented and then dried and, of course, laboratory tested, as we do everything. We test for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and all of that. And then we put it in these pouches for you. And so you can get all of these active molecular constituents of 30 different superfoods all at once in that product. Again, available at healthrangerstore.com. And then on the left-hand side there, we have our certified organic lab-tested goji berries back in stock. And goji berries are difficult to source because of course, global supply chains being a problem. But also looking at the lead testing and the heavy metals testing, the E. coli testing that we do, not all the batches pass in terms of goji berries. And frankly, some goji berries, just the quality's not that good. So some batches we reject for that reason. But this is a really great batch, super clean, laboratory tested, certified organic, ready to go. Those are available now. You can eat them as a snack or you can put them in smoothies. They're quite delicious and they are chock full of nutrients. So go to healthrangerstore.com, and there you'll see we have, you know, Cocoa Energize there, astaxanthin soft gels. These are really good. What else? Oh, the kombucha probiotics drink, tooth salt with neem, Cocoa Love, bee pollen, much more. All of this available at healthrangerstore.com. We appreciate your support and all of your purchases at healthrangerstore.com. Go to support this platform and our pro-humanity mission. Understand that we support humanity. We support people of all religions, races, colors, ethnicities, genders, orientations, you name it. We support human life and we value all human life. And we believe that our products help keep people healthy and happy so that they can pursue whatever mission they've been given in their life. And that's what we're here to do, is to help heal the world through clean food. That's our slogan. HealthRangerStore.com. Thank you for your support. Thank you for shopping with us. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Health Ranger Store and Brighteon.com. Welcome to Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder, and today we're joined by a first-time guest, but someone whose work you have hopefully already seen, because he is exposing the child trafficking pipeline into the United States that appears to be funded and assisted by federal government agents as well, which means your taxpayer dollars are very likely funding child trafficking into the United States. So we're joined by Anthony Rubin, the founder of Muckraker.com, which has put out exclusive bombshell footage recently showing this happening in broad daylight in U.S. airports. Mr. Rubin, thank you for joining me today. It's an honor to have you on, and congratulations for your extraordinary work. It breaks my heart to see this happening, but I'm glad you're exposing it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, man. I'm looking forward to getting into it and discussing exactly what I saw.
Okay, well, let's do that. We're going to roll some footage of what you showed, what you already released, while you talk. But go ahead and tell us what you saw as you were filming and confronting people who were trafficking children in broad daylight.
Sure. So let me just be clear and just give people some context as to what they're seeing. So basically what's going on is, and this is not just happening where I filmed it, this is happening at multiple airports throughout the country. But what's happening is unaccompanied children, these are children who are caught at the border that don't have a parent or guardian or adult with them, are detained by Border Patrol, and then they're handed off to the Department of Health and Human Services. And then from there, what happens is they are placed with a sponsor. And that sounds really official, but all a sponsor is basically a person who, when the child comes over, they tell the Department of Health and Human Services, hey, here's a name and a phone number of a person that I'm going to go to. And they'll say, okay, this is my parent or my aunt or uncle. And then the Department of Health and Human Services goes through a process of trying to vet that information and vet the sponsor. And what happens is, I mean, a lot of the time, it's not an actual parent or aunt or uncle. The vetting process is very, very, very lax. And I mean, that's putting it lightly. I mean, it's extremely sketchy, and we can get into that more. But bottom line is, a lot of these kids are actually placed in the hands of human smugglers, not their family member. And so what I witnessed was and what I filmed, what I exposed, along with these lax vetting procedures and the compounds that they're holding these children in and everything else, was actual federal government contractors who are taking these kids from these various compounds that they're held at and escorting them through the airport and delivering them to their quote unquote sponsors. Again, a lot of times that ends up being a human trafficker. And these escorts, if that's what they're called officially, is escorts, they're extremely shady. You go up to them and you talk to them and you say, hey, what's going on? Are these your children? What are you doing? And their first reaction is to put a mask on the kid, or to hide their name badge, or to say, get the camera out of my face. Or some of them got in my face. I think they were trying to provoke a reaction out of me so that maybe they could do something to have some legal recourse. Of course, I didn't take that bait. But yeah, the bottom line is that the whole operation, based on the footage that you will see that I published, is extremely sketchy. They show up in these white vans in the morning, move the kids through the airport as quick as possible, and shuttle them off all across the country. And the reason why this is a big deal is, since this has been going on under the Biden administration, one third of the kids, or at least 85,000 of these children, have never been heard from again. And that's the highest level explanation I can give to anybody.
So, Anthony, this is extraordinary. It's horrifying. There are a lot of horrors happening in the world right now. This is one of them. But what I was really struck by in your video is how guilty and sketchy these so-called sponsors look. Because if they were doing something innocent, why wouldn't they just say, yeah, hi, my name's Bob, this is my nephew, I'm taking him to his grandmother in Oklahoma, he's going to be safe. But no, it's like, get away from me, I'm putting on a mask, you don't have the right to film, stop filming, I'm not talking to you. Like, that is super, super sketchy. It's almost an admission of guilt, like they're up to something nefarious. And was that the impression that you took away from it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I asked them. I asked one of them, there's a clip in there where I'm just, holding the camera up to one of these escorts. And I'm asking her, I'm like, can you tell us where you're going? No response.
Right.
And then I say, listen, can you just tell us? Because, maybe that's just their protocol. Maybe legally they're bound and they can't say where they're going. Okay, they don't know who I am. Okay, sure. Then I say, can you just tell us who you work with? You should be able to disclose that. I mean, they wear their name badges for a reason, right?
Right.
Just tell us who you work with. None of them want to even say who they work with, which, again, like you just said, to me, that tells me a lot of what I need to know about how sketchy this whole operation is. Why would you not just say who you work with? Refer me to your superior. I mean, if I was part of this, which I would never be, but if I had that job and somebody was putting a camera on my face asking me these questions, the last thing I would want to do is leave them with the impression that something was up to no good. I would be as upfront and out in the open as possible, but that's not what these people are like, and you could see that clearly in the video.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, based on your investigation, and I want to encourage people to visit your website, muckraker.com, because you have articles there, you've got more videos, you have video channels and so on. But based on your investigation, is it your belief that some percentage of these children end up being sex trafficked in the United States?
It's not even a belief. It's a guarantee. I include in the video references to there's congressional documents that I put in there that say that out in the open, that a lot of times these kids end up being sex trafficked. There's I put a clip in there from a report that's partially redacted that came out from the Department of Homeland Security Office of Inspector General, which admits that a lot of times these kids are, it says in the document, DHS sometimes releases these children into the hands of human smugglers.
Wow.
So that's guaranteed. And you could find other articles online all over the place of the migrant children who are either working as sex slaves or working as indentured servants on a farm somewhere, right? And they're just basically, they just have a debt over their head. And so they pay off the debt either by working as a sex slave or, again, working as some sort of slave somewhere in the United States. Maybe they're just, a housemaid or something. But they could be anything. And those are just the lucky ones. Those are the ones that are found. Like I said, a third of them have gone missing and we don't even know where they are. So, I mean, you could fill in the gap there. Whatever you could do with a child or whatever some sort of nasty, sick person might do to a child, anything's possible. They're gone.
Dungeons, man. Freaking dungeons. I mean, they put them in underground. I mean, they put them in their basements and abuse them and whatever, because there are some sick, sick, demented, perverted, satanic people all over the world, but also in the United States. Now, the open borders are, in essence, a necessary component for this kind of trafficking to continue. And what have you observed about the flow of children through the open border and the unwillingness of both rhinos and Democrats to close off the border in any meaningful way?
Sure. I mean, yeah, you just hit the nail on the head. As long as there's an open border, this is going to continue. And to a certain extent, it has to continue. I'm not sure that, this program is no good. Obviously, these children are going missing. They're getting placed in the hands of human smugglers. Sure. But no matter what happens, there's no such thing as a good program with an open border and unaccompanied children coming over. I mean, what are you going to do with them, right? You have, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds or however many year olds coming over. And what are you going to do? Are you going to release them onto the street? You can't do that. So you have to place them somewhere. Are we going to have mass orphanages? I'm not sure that sounds like a good solution either. I wouldn't want to live in some sort of government orphanage. So there's no good option here. The bottom line is that you have to seal off the border and stop the mass flow of people. Otherwise, something atrocious is going to happen to these children. That's just the bottom line. And, on a similar note with what I'm seeing at the border with these children coming over, there are children that are coming over. And this is not new groundbreaking news, but I've seen this firsthand. Children who come over here, full-grown men holding them. I shouldn't even say children, they're infants that are coming over here, full-grown men holding them, and they're just totally knocked out and incapacitated. They're like a rag doll, just totally limp. And this happens every day. And Border Patrol comes and they book them in and nothing's done. I mean, honestly, the police should be called and there should be an investigation right there. The adult should be arrested, but that's not what happens. They just book the adult and the child in like all is normal, and that's that, and that happens every single day.
Well, somebody needs to keep the adrenochrome supply chain running. Now, let's talk about the origins of this. Where do you think that these children are largely coming from? Like which countries or regions of the world? I know it's not all Central and South Americans. There are also Middle Eastern children and Asian children that come through the pipeline there. But what's your guess based on your investigations of the origins?
Border Patrol actually publishes those numbers. You can go and you could actually filter it down. You could filter it down by unaccompanied child, and then you could actually see a breakdown by the country. Now, to the best of my knowledge, they, after the top like 10 or 15 countries, you actually can't see any more detailed. So it's like they'll show you unaccompanied children from these top 15 countries, and then it's just other, right? But I mean, most of them are Latino for sure. They're definitely from Central and South America. But I mean, the whole world is coming over here. Like all of the stands are coming over here, like Uzbekistan, Pakistan, Afghanistan. I mean, people from China all the time coming over here. So it's anybody's guess as to where these children might be from. And I mean, certainly the, well, actually it doesn't matter. I was gonna say the further away they might've come from, the worse it is, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, what's the difference between coming from Honduras or coming from China? Once you're in here, I mean, you're lost, you're not getting back. And also that's another one of the, well, we could get into it, but basically one of the policies when it comes to ORR is a sub-department of the Department of Health and Human Services. And ORR actually goes about vetting these sponsors. And I include in my video, there was actually an investigation done, and it was found that a ORR case manager was fired for investigating a suspected case of human trafficking because her superiors were doing nothing about it. And they just straight up tell these workers, these government workers, listen, it's not our job to investigate human trafficking. It's our job to move these children, and that's it.
Wow. Yes, exactly. Now, let's shift gears a little bit. It's related, though, and you know, the world recently witnessed horrors of Israeli civilians being slaughtered by, you know, reportedly Hamas groups. And it brings to mind a question in the United States. Do you believe that there is a plan for some kind of event in the United States for pre-positioned military age males from various countries, perhaps some from the Middle East, to wreak havoc across America at some point? Or is that a possibility? Because I see on your website, you've got articles about China and a China invasion plan. What are your thoughts on all of that? And the reason I mentioned Israel is because it just showed that when a nation does not actually do a good job protecting its borders, then anything can happen. So what are your thoughts?
It's not only a distinct possibility, it's an inevitability. I'm not sure what country wouldn't. I mean, listen, if our enemies, or if you want to call them adversaries, whatever, borders were open, would we not send in as many military age males as possible? The whole policy is absolutely asinine, but it's all intentional. I mean, the people that are behind this open border policy, these are people that have signed on with the UN and Agenda 2030, which we could get into. They know exactly what they're doing. And, you know, similar to Israel, and again, what you see is atrocious, people flying in on hang gliders and massacring people at a festival. But we also know that there's credible sources saying that, you know, there were warnings that something like this was going to happen. And it took place anyway. And so that's something else that people need to investigate, right? How was this allowed to take place? How is it that one of the most militarized areas or countries on the globe with one of the best intelligence apparatuses didn't see this coming? And you could say the same thing about the United States, right? I mean, they can, we have with the NSA and the CIA and all of our intelligence apparatuses, they know exactly what's going on. They know exactly who's crossing into this border and or coming across our border. And
it's deliberate. But
you,
I mean,
you would have to ask yourself, what kind of government would allow this to take place? Because it's guaranteed that there are foreign agents of all sorts coming across our border on a daily basis.
But I think the answer is the same for both countries. It's clear that Israeli intelligence did not suffer a failure, that Israeli intelligence was told to allow that event to happen. The same in the United States. The entire federal government is told to allow the border invasion to continue to accelerate into the United States. So, and I know that you were kind of alluding to that, but it brings up the question. The nations, the governments of Israel and the United States both are deliberately pursuing policies that see their countries invaded and occupied by enemy forces. Why is that happening in your view?
Well, listen, I mean, there's so many different players and different interests, right, among different politicians and different groups, people who think that they stand to gain from certain policies. But at the highest level, right? I mean, we could discuss, you know, different players. We could discuss Netanyahu, or we could discuss Joe Biden, who honestly is just a puppet. He's a nobody. So we could discuss individuals. But at the highest level, what it comes down to is that from a crisis, a government can consolidate power. The government creates a crisis, and then the people just clamor, please, somebody, anybody, do something to solve this crisis. And it's always big government. Big government opens up its arms. And out of the crisis, people just get desperate and they run right into the arms of big government.
They do.
And they give up their individual liberties. And we all know the saying, right? Those who give up freedom or sacrifice freedom for safety and security deserve neither and will lose both.
That's right.
And so that's where we're headed. And that's what's going to happen. And that's the agenda. You create a crisis and then you expand government. And that's how you grow a totalitarian state.
Now, a question to you personally about your work. What is it that drives you to continue to do this? Because I'm sure you are subjected to the typical death threats and demonetization and censorship that everybody is subjected to if they're telling the truth about anything that matters, by the way. So what keeps you going?
I'm not sure what else I would do. All I'll say is this. I love this country and I love freedom. And there's nothing that pisses me off more than a bully or somebody trying to tell me what to do. And if you think about a socialist state or a communist state, which is where we're headed now, it's a very emasculating system, right? You have to destroy real men. Think about COVID. That's when I started doing this. I always kind of had my finger on the political scale, but COVID is when I really started this, right? Because that's when we had a full-blown takeover. And if you think about the system that they put in place then, right? Wear your mask, get your jab, stay at home. It's just so emasculating. I couldn't imagine having a family then. You have to just, as a man, submit to this totalitarian regime.
Yeah.
And, you know, I myself as a man will not stand for it. It makes me too angry. So that at the bottom line, the root of all of it, that's probably where it comes from. But at the end of the day, I love this country and I just cannot sit idly by behind a desk just trying to work for a paycheck while I see this going on. Because ultimately, I know that if I do that, you know, 10 years, 20 years go by, none of that's going to matter.
That's right. Well, but what about the threats? Because you are exposing some very sensitive, dark secrets of the regime. They need this human trafficking pipeline to remain open, you know, to feed, frankly, a lot of their donors. I mean, how many Democrat donors have been caught drugging up trafficked, you know, slaves, essentially? It's insane. But aren't you getting hit with a lot of threats?
Listen, as of yet, no, I have not. I'm sure they'll come eventually.
Well, yeah,
listen,
buckle
I'm
up.
Here.
Get ready.
They'll come. Yeah. I'm sure they'll come. But again, what am I to do, right? My soul is not going to rest among the cowards of history. That's for sure. And so ultimately, I know that one day I'll be on my deathbed, right? And what's going to matter is not that, you know, I took the easy route. I'm going to look back on my life. I'm going to say, you know, did I have the balls, the patriotic cojones to actually go out and try to effect some change? And if I didn't, then, you know, the pain of lying there on my deathbed, hopefully as an old man, knowing that I didn't have the guts to actually try to do something, that'll be far more painful than any sort of attacks that these people could bring upon me.
Right, right. Well, I'm glad you have the courage and spirit to keep doing what you're doing. Do you plan to do more videos on the streets, in airports, or what are your plans moving forward?
I got a couple of plans. I mean, there's definitely going to be a part two to this, which I would be happy to talk about off air, just because, you know, I don't really want to alert people
sure.
to what I'm going to try to investigate. So that's for sure. I mean, the other aspect of this is just investigating the whole basically trail of tears from Quito, Ecuador, where the whole world is flying into Colombia through the Darien Gap and then up Central America and Mexico into the U.S. I've explored bits and pieces of it. My plan is most likely to go down to Quito, where everybody's flying in, because anybody from any country in the world could go to Quito. So they all fly in there and they make their way to Colombia through the Darien Gap. So I believe I'm going to go to Ecuador and kind of follow the route that all of these, I don't even want to call them migrants, all these illegal aliens are taking and investigate that further.
Well, that's going to be very rather exciting, quite a journey. I used to live in Ecuador, so I'm very familiar with Quito and the airport there. But you're going to be heading up north into Colombia, and you're going to be in for an adventure. Now, I understand you've interviewed Michael Yan several times, and as you know, Yan reports on how Alejandro Mayorkas is, you know, Homeland Security is actually funding the invasion camps. Such as the San Vicente camp near the Darien Gap in Panama, and Lajas Blancas is another camp. Do you plan to visit these camps and add to the documentation of these invasion staging areas?
Oh, absolutely. So I was down there in at those camps with Michael Yon back in April. That's how
oh,
I
you
first
were.
Met
oh, fantastic. Okay.
Yeah. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And the oh man, I mean, just from I'm sure everybody's seen the photos and videos, but just from the time that I was there in April till now, it looks like a basically almost a sardine can full of humans. It's absolutely it's just a sea of bodies that you see in these camps. I don't even know how they're living. But certainly I would go back there and stop at those camps. I really want to investigate, honestly, just the full, like I said, trail of tears is what I would call it, from Quito all the way up to the U.S. border, and just kind of document the whole thing as it currently stands right now, because there's certainly no signs of it slowing down anytime soon. It's only, you know, it's only growing.
Well, look, let's talk off air, because I would really love to open up channels for you. We have on Brighteon.com, we now have live streaming capability we can turn on for channels. You could live stream with us and simultaneously with other platforms. We'd like to carry your reports on Brighteon.tv as well and see if there's a way to do that. And also, we're opening up a channel for Michael Yon, a special Brighteon TV streaming channel, and probably you could share that channel and broadcast there. So let's talk off air about ways that we can just help you get the word out if you're going to be streaming video. Are you going to have you're going to have satellite bandwidth, or how are you going to broadcast from this trip? There's not a lot of great bandwidth where you're going.
Yeah, so I've never really gotten into live streaming so much. Usually what I do is go out, get the footage, you know, post snippets here and there, and then I really just try to make very deep dive exposés, you know, after the fact. That's really what I focus on, but live streaming is certainly I got to get into. So, you know, any advice or anything that you could tell me or help me out in that regard, you know, I'd be all ears for sure.
Okay, absolutely. Well, we'll talk, and we have, you know, our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, had donated satellite equipment to Michael Yon that he's about to turn on to broadcast with us. So let's talk off air about what maybe they can help you with some gear. We can help you with broadcasting. Bottom line is what you're doing is really critically important, and we have resources that can help you. You're going to be in for a world of adventure down there. That's for sure. So when are you planning on going next? Or, I mean, I don't know if you want to say on air actually, but is it this year?
Certainly this year.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very soon. I'm just waiting to see how a few things shape up, you know, either part two of this or go down there next. But either way, it's going to be very, very soon.
All right. Well, you know, the U.S. State Department was trying to find Michael Yon to get him out of Panama. So
really?
Yeah. They were running around down there trying to tell officials to kick Yon out of the country.
When did that? I haven't heard that.
No,
at all.
Ask Michael about that. Yeah. Well, because he's showing their secrets like you're doing. You're showing secrets of human trafficking. He's showing secrets of the camps, which are not being shut down. I don't know if you recall, but what was it, 6 months ago or something, Mayorkas and Biden announced they were shutting down all the camps in Panama. They didn't. They doubled down and expanded them. It's more money, more funding. It was just a complete lie, just gaslighting lie.
Yeah, they constantly change their stance. I've also heard the opposite. I've read articles where they're talking about sending troops down there into the jungle. I've read articles like that as well, so I'm not too sure where they stand. I mean, we know where they stand, right?
Yeah.
It's a mass human highway through the jungle, and it's only growing.
It is.
That's their stance.
Yeah, and whatever the administration says, you can't trust them. I mean, you know, a week ago, Mayorkas said, oh, we urgently have to build a wall. And then the next day, he's like, no, just kidding. We don't need a wall. Because he got too much pushback from other Democrats that, you know, they need the pipeline. They need to keep it going for all kinds of reasons. All right. So looking at your website, muckraker.com, what are some other main stories that you think we need to talk about here in the minutes we have left?
Agenda 2030. Absolutely. Everybody needs to know that. I mean, I'm sure your audience is kind of well aware what that's all about with the sustainable development goals and all that. But Agenda 2030 was signed on in 2015 at a UN meeting under Barack Obama. And anybody can go read it. I mean, there are so many people that still think it's a conspiracy theory. Right? I mean, you talk to
it's published
person. Right? I mean, I'm not sure what your family is like. I mean, I come from a pretty big family and intelligent people. But if I was to ask a lot of them, hey, you know, have you ever heard of Agenda 2030? They would probably say no, or they would tell me I was a conspiracy theorist, right? I mean, everybody watching this, go download the Agenda 2030 white paper and just read it through. it's a blueprint for world socialism. And so that's what we are currently heading into right now. All of the major governments of the world have signed on to it, including the United States. I mean, honestly, it's mostly being proliferated because of us, right? I mean, we're the major funder of the UN. And as it relates to mass migration of people, what you have is you have the United Nations, and then you have the IOM, which is the International Organization of Migration. And everybody can read a white paper. It's called Migration and the 2030 Agenda. I believe it was put out around 2018 or so. And it literally calls these quote unquote migrants, again, they're not migrants, they're illegal aliens, but it calls them agents of development. And it also says right. that the goal of the 2030 Agenda is not to stop, but it's to facilitate migration to people.
Yes.
So what does that tell you? All right. And so basically the bottom line, what it boils down to, when you read the document and you try to make sense of it, in order for that document for world socialism to come into play, you have to end sovereign nation states. And how do you do that? You have a mass movement of people from all over the globe, from the third world, flood into these nation states, flood into Europe, Western Europe, and flood into the United States. And then these countries, over a period of time, after millions or tens or hundreds of millions of these people flood in, you no longer have a nation state anymore. What is America anymore? Nobody knows. Everybody's forgotten the Constitution doesn't mean anything, right? The Constitution only means something if you have a group of people that believe in it. That's all a nation state really is. It's a group of a large group of people with a set of beliefs that abide by those beliefs and protect them within their borders, right? And so as soon as you wash all that away by having hundreds of millions of people come in, eventually it's just gone. You just do away with the Constitution. And the more people you let in, the easier it will be for the people who are perpetrating this Agenda 2030 agenda to do away with our Constitution and slurp us up under some UN-run world government. And as crazy as that sounds, I know this sounds radical to most people who aren't really aware of what's going on. After you do enough digging, and it's honestly not that much digging you need to do, just look around, read a couple of white papers, you realize that what I'm saying is totally true and it's well on its way.
The American people are being replaced. That's as clear as day. Replacement theory is not a theory, it's replacement fact. And, you know, I lived in Ecuador, like I said, for a couple of years, and I've traveled extensively throughout Central and South America. And what I've come to learn is that there is a cultural expectation of socialism among those people. They expect government handouts. They expect welfare. It doesn't mean that they aren't in their own ways, many of them innovative or entrepreneurial. That spirit does exist. And many of the people fleeing Venezuela, for example, they do want to be free and they're tired of the socialism. But the masses of Central and South Americans tend to embrace socialism as an expectation. The government should subsidize our food, our fuel. The government should take care of us. All healthcare should be free and so on. And now they're bringing all that to the United States. And you're right, Anthony, they're going to displace the American people and replace the culture with basically a South American culture, which is rooted in socialism, leaning to communism. I mean, we're seeing it happen every day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as you said, it's not to say, because I always try to, you know, make sure that I don't want to come across as dehumanizing, right? Because people use that against you. I mean, these are human beings and they're not unintelligent people, right? I mean, a human being is a human being. And like I said, they're not unintelligent, but there's a difference between intelligence and knowledge. And, you know, like you said, most of these people, they're not brought up with the ideas of capitalism and individual liberties
right.
and small government and the government being the servant of the people and not the other way around.
Right.
Right. These are very unique ideas. And I mean, this government that we established, you know, that was our constitution was actually, when did it come into play? 1789 officially, right? I mean, that is
91. The Bill of Rights in 91. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the Bill of Rights added
so
in 91.
Whatever it was. The last 200 and something years that we've been living under that constitution, that's like 0.0001% of humanity that's experienced the kind of freedoms that we've experienced. Right. I mean, the history of humanity is living under a totalitarian regime. Right.
Yes.
And in order to have a society like the one that we've had for the last couple hundred years, you need to have an educated populace that understands what that society, what that country's rooted in and founded upon. And,
well, absolutely. And let me add, Anthony. So, for example, Second Amendment. In America, we understand the Second Amendment is our right, that no government can take away our right to keep and bear arms. In South America, it was understood by everybody that you're only allowed a gun if the government grants you permission. You have to have a permit. And the idea that individuals could own guns and that that was their right is entirely alien to most Central and South Americans, by the way. In fact, it's alien to a lot of Europeans, come to think of it. But in America, that's a sacred right. And it should be. And by the way, since we mentioned Israel earlier, guess what happens when you disarm your population? Well, they can't defend themselves. And now all of a sudden, Israel's government is jumping all over itself. I mean, stumbling over itself to try to grant gun rights to the citizens. And the Israeli government is actually handing out weapons now to Israeli militias. Did you know that? They're handing out guns today to Israeli militias that a month ago, they would have said, no, you're an extremist. Why do you want guns? Well, guess what? We want guns so that we don't die. I mean, but anyway, I was just trying to add to what you were saying there, Anthony. I'm sorry to interrupt so much, but go ahead with your thoughts.
No, I mean, listen, you just hit the nail on the head, right? And again, that's just one example. But, you know, I mentioned this idea of the government being the servant of the people. You know, on the flip side, we've already, the American people, even homegrown Americans, native-born Americans, have already moved so far away from that. You know, some of these people on the flip side maybe believe in true freedom more than actual Americans that were born here, right? Because even our schools have been taken over. Nobody teaches about small government anymore, right? Nobody even realized, I mean, there's so many things I could point to, but for example, like the income tax, which we've been living under for the last 100 years, nobody realizes that tax it's a totalitarian, tyrannical tax is what right. It is. It's a direct unapportioned tax. But, you know, they don't teach you about the Constitution, because if they did, you would very quickly realize at some point, whoa, you know, a lot of the systems that we have in place right now are totally unconstitutional.
That's right.
Gold and silver being legal tender. That's still in there. But, you know, that's gone away as well. So the point is that, you know, we've been whitewashed. Our culture has been washed away. And this is kind of just like furthering that is what it is. But, you know, it's not to say that the decline wasn't already well on its way before this. This is just speeding it up, putting it in hyperdrive.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I'm glad you pointed out there are some immigrants that recognize liberty more than typical Americans do. But I support legal immigration. You know, I mean, I'm married to an immigrant, and immigrants who go through the legal process and who bring knowledge and skills and talent and culture to America can contribute to this nation. And in many cases, they do recognize how special America is, even more than a typical American. But you can't just have a mob rush of, you know, millions across the border, completely unvetted. Oh, and also all the MS-13 gang members emptied out of the prisons in various, you know, countries. Bring them all in. No, that doesn't work. That just leads to chaos. But that's the plan. It is Operation Chaos.
Of course. I mean, that's the collapse of the nation state. I mean, why are we protecting the Ukraine's borders, right? I mean, their borders have been intruded upon, right? And that's, what do we call that? Or at least in relation to the Ukraine, it's a declaration of war. And maybe it's because you got a man named Putin who's heading the whole thing. And maybe because there's an army with guns that then they call it an invasion. But I don't understand, do you need guns to have an invasion? Because as far as I'm concerned, an invasion is just an intrusion upon a country's borders. You know, the people being armed or unarmed, I'm not sure that even really matters. I mean, where do you make the distinction in the definition of an invasion? As far as I'm concerned, and I think if we were to look up the definition of an invasion word for word, it fits the definition for sure. And that's what it is.
Yeah, it's an invasion and occupation. And by the way, there is a lot of weapons trafficking, as you well know, across the border. And also there's weapons. Weapons have been staged, pre-staged in storage centers in the United States, ready to be picked up and used by certain military age, you know, combatants who have come across the border. That's not all of them. It may only be, you know, 5% of them, but it's still a pretty big number given the millions that are coming across. And yes, they can be given orders. There can be, I call it an activation day. They just go down to the local storage facility, open the door, boom, they've got mortars, RPGs, full auto weapons, and they just go to town against America from within. And that's
absolutely
probably coming.
Absolutely. I mean, even 5%, not even 5%. What if it's 6 million people? What if it's 1% of that would be what? 60,000? What if it's a tenth of 1%? 6,000. That's still insane.
Yeah.
I mean, either it doesn't matter how you slice and dice it. And that's being optimistic, obviously, a tenth of 1%. The point is, as you said, you know, be there weapons caches stored throughout the United States, or maybe they want to use, I mean, you could actually buy a suitcase EMP. I shouldn't say this on air. I mean, maybe I'll give people ideas. I don't really want to do that. But you can buy a suitcase EMP, which is basically used for testing systems, but it could also be used as a weapon. And I mean, you could go take out power stations like that. And I mean, you take out enough of them, the whole grid will come down. And I mean, so that could come about, and that could actually be worse than a nuclear attack in a lot of regards. And so we could sit here and talk about the different types of attacks that could possibly come. But what's a guarantee is that something is coming. And the agents from all sorts of countries, from all sorts of enemies abroad, be it China or Russia or whoever else, they're here for sure. And I'm not somebody to sit here and be like, oh, China, or Russia, not at all. But it's or even Iran, right? Or anybody that's a sympathizer to Iran, whatever. And like you said, they will be activated and some type of attack is imminent. So, I mean, people need to absolutely be ready for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have intel from my sources that there are Syrian militants who have been outfitted with explosive vests that were engineered in Iran, by the way. And they have successfully smuggled those across the U.S. border. Those are in storage and they're ready to deploy as suicide bombers in the United States. And now then we look at what's happening in Israel, the escalation of violence there, the Israeli government apparently announcing that they're going to just wipe out millions of Palestinian civilians, which will only piss off Turkey and Iran and Syria and maybe Russia. I mean, the spiral of violence is going to spill over into the United States and Canada and Europe especially as well. This is the path that it looks like we're on. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Absolutely, I agree with it. And again, it's like Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. It's a book that I recommend to everybody.
Yeah, a good book, right?
It's something to the effect of, you know, men come to a frenzy in crowds, but they only come to their senses individually, one by one.
That's
right. This latest situation, right, in Israel, I think, look on Twitter and go look at all of these pundits, if that's what you want to call them, that as soon as some sort of piece of news comes out, I mean, there hasn't even been enough time to verify it, or some sort of sketchy video. I mean, nobody even knows where it came from. It just surfaces somewhere. All of these pundits with like millions of followers just pounce on it. Look what happened. And they help to promote. It's like, dude, have you like done, where did that video come from? Do you know?
Yeah, it was like, it was 2 years ago in Syria with that pickup truck video was taken, but they don't care.
Oh, with the children in the back.
Right. They're going to recycle it today.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so so these people, you know, these people that are online that have a following that are the supposed experts, maybe we should stop following the advice of these experts, right? And just take a step back and actually, you know, decide who we should listen to. But these people help to promote this mass hysteria. And then from that mass hysteria, nothing good comes of that. That's how you step right into a nuclear war.
I completely agree. I'm calling it bloodlust, and I'm seeing signs of bloodlust, which is where the rationality and diplomacy is thrown out the window, and everybody's just calling for mass death of the other side, but not just death of militants, but deaths of civilians. And I'm seeing some very, very concerning signs right now that probably are worthy of another discussion, but cool heads are not prevailing. And the fact that so many, for example, Palestinians have come to America and Canada and Australia and Europe, when Israel launches its ground attack on Gaza, which is imminent as we're recording this, reportedly, Palestinian populations are going to absolutely erupt in Western cities all over Europe and North America. I mean, that seems inevitable.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, we already saw demonstrations this weekend.
Right? Yeah, and I think they're going to turn a lot more combative.
Oh, I'm sure. But again, what does it show you? Just, you know, kind of keeping it at a high level discussion here. It shows you the dangers of the mob and the dangers of a mob mentality. And, you know, the founders of this country knew that very well. That's why they call democracy mobocracy, which is what it is.
Right.
You just have this mad crowd of people kind of just roaming about, and they act on a whim, and there is no rationale. There is no sympathy. Mobs are very brutal, actually.
Yes.
And And that's what you have right now. You have, again, it was the same with Ukraine. When
absolutely.
Yep, it was the same in Ukraine. I can remember getting into like heated discussions with some of my friends that were otherwise very smart people that had been caught up in this mob mentality. We have to support Ukraine. I was like, what are
I've
you
seen
talking
it too.
Stepping up, you're going to step us into World War III. And then sure enough, because like I just said, individuals only come to their senses one by one slowly.
I've had these same discussions with people who claim, oh, Russia launched an unprovoked attack on Ukraine. Really? Unprovoked? So you know nothing of history is what you're saying. You don't know anything about Minsk agreements. You don't know anything about NATO expansion. You don't know anything about the collapse of the Soviet Union and the promises made by the West. To say that Russia is unprovoked is to be ignorant of reality.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody should, I mean, this conversation is going a lot of places, but everybody should go look at just a NATO map.
Exactly. Over the years.
It's so obvious. I mean, if you could look at that and still think that it was an unprovoked attack, I don't really know what to tell you. It's fun. There's actually plenty of people out there, supposed experts, supposed pundits, that would still say it was an unprovoked attack. But I mean, go look at a map of NATO from the collapse of the USSR until when the invasion happened of Ukraine. It's insane. I mean, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, most people in America don't know that the Ukrainian government was shelling its own citizens in the Donbass region for years, just launching artillery strikes against civilians. You know, I mean, that's going to piss people off, and it's going to make them want to join Russia, which is exactly what has now happened. You know, I mean, they voted to join Russia.
I mean, most people can't point to Ukraine on a map. Here's actually something that I've been doing as a social experiment. I haven't even been filming it. I just been doing it for fun. You know, sometimes when I'm walking outside at night and I see a group of people, and I've done this very recently. I do it at least a couple of times a week. I'll go up to them and I'll just ask them. I'll say, hey, what's the First Amendment? And I swear to you,
what?
It's astounding. The majority of people do not know.
You're kidding me.
Oh, I swear to you. I
no.
ask for fun. A lot of times
no.
I'll go and I'll just ask, you know, like a cute girl that I see, just as a conversation starter. You know, you could use that, I guess, as a way to like weed them out. They don't know what the First Amendment is. It's like, okay, no, I'm not interested anyway. Right. But I'll just ask. I'll be like, hey, what's the First Amendment? Not a clue. Not a clue.
That's incredible.
And so, I mean, how could we expect them to have any idea what the Ukraine is, right? And so you have these mobs of people that can be stirred into a frenzy and are stirred into a frenzy via this mass media apparatus that we currently have. And, you know, that's then used to direct billions of dollars for certain political agendas,
yes,
lining the pockets of corrupt politicians all over the place.
Well, it's incredible. We have covered a lot here. We're going to wrap it up, Anthony, because just in interest of time, but this has been an extraordinary conversation, and I can tell you have a lot of really important work that you're going to do over the next few months. I want to give out your website, muckraker.com, and invite you, again, we'll talk off air about how we can help bring some additional channels and publicity to your work coming up. Any final thoughts?
I mean, that's it. Listen, first of all, thank you for having me on. And second of all, everybody that's watching this, you know, don't sit idly by. If you're watching this and you're nodding your head, that good. That means you already have all the necessary precursor information. Go out and educate other people, right? Just like I'm doing here. I'm only sitting here right now talking to Mike Adams because, you know, I just had some balls to go out with a camera and expose some things and put some information out there. Right?
That's right.
I mean, you could be in my seat. And if you don't want to be in my seat, that's fine too. Go out and just educate your friends, talk to your family. And if on the flip side, if you're watching this and, you know, you're just kind of like blank staring at the screen, not really knowing what we're talking about. And a lot of these things were, you know, Agenda 2030 and whatever else we talked about is going over your head. Go actually do some investigation and get yourself up to date with what's going on here. But all I could say is please, 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 from one American to another, do not sit idly by, because at this point we're on borrowed time.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. All right, Anthony Rubin, we appreciate what you're doing and we appreciate you taking the time to join us today, and be safe in your work. God bless you. And everybody visit muckraker.com. Check out his work. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you so much.
All right. And for those of you watching, again, this is brighteon.com, uncensored, as you can tell. And you can repost this interview on other platforms and channels. Feel free to do so. Just give a link to muckraker.com. And thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here, the founder of brighteon.com, free speech video network, and also brighteon.tv, where this interview will also air. Thank you. God bless you all. Take care.